Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
Hello, this is Barry Tash, and welcome to another episode of SciSense, a Paratrek. Apparently, our guest called in a little early this evening, about a minute early, because I guess the clocks were synchronized. Our guest tonight, assuming she calls back in, is a really unique and extraordinary young lady by the name of Christine Letterman, who I had the pleasure to meet 2 years ago at the Phenomenology 101 in Gettysburg. And we became friends, and, you know, this is she's an organizer of paranormal events. I hope she calls back, because when she called in, the show wasn't even on the air yet. Maybe her clocks were a little faster. Hopefully, she will return the call, because she called in about a minute too soon, and I wasn't even able to, let's see if I can, hold on for a second. Maybe I can call her and get her to call back. Don't go anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. We're having these ongoing problems with the system. I'll try to call her in a second. I'm waiting for this thing to work. What the fuck is going on with this thing? Hello? 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 Damn it. Yes, well, hopefully we're on now. I think we've resolved this problem. Our guest tonight, the lovely and intelligent Christine Letterman, should be calling in any second. And hopefully we won't have this little hiccup again. There we go. Let's see if she's on the air. Hello? 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 Hello?
I can hear you. I can hear
there?
You fine.
Christine,
yes.
You there?
I'm here.
Okay, good. Okay, we're on the air. Good. Anyway,
great.
We got a little technical hiccup there. I've already introduced you to the audience, and based on the short bio you sent me. Now, we met each other the end of March 2009.
Correct.
And the reason we met each other is you're the one who set up that venue for Phenomenology 101, correct?
Well, I am the hotel negotiator.
Okay.
For all those haunted events. So I helped Dana and Chris Winger to negotiate their rates.
Right.
And for their first event.
Good. And how long have you been doing this for?
I've been doing it for about 3 years with paranormal groups.
And what led you to doing this? I mean, this is not your average job. You have a really interesting background in terms of comedy and writing and speaking and acting. And I'm just curious, what made you take this divergence?
Well, basically what led me to this was I was a director of sales for the Stanley Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always had kind of a sixth sense, so to speak. And TAPS and Darkness Radios were my clients mm-hmm. when I was at the Stanley. And when I left that position, David Schrader with Darkness Radio asked me to organize and find his hotels for his events. And I opened up my own business after that.
Okay, good. What's interesting is before we get into the Stanley and you're hosting the event, putting these things together, from what I know of you and the conversations we've had, you've had a pretty good history of paranormal experiences yourself. You're not exactly a novice to this area, correct?
Correct.
Tell me a little about what you were growing up having, and you did things to me that rather impressed me. Before you talk, I want to tell the listeners, we were talking about it more than a year ago, about a year and a half ago, and I should make the audience realize that you remind me of someone I knew a very long time ago. Another actress, and not a voice as good as yours, nor as witty or as funny, but it's physically striking. Anyway, long story short, I couldn't remember the last place I was with this girl from 1977, and you told me. And that's a little
interesting. That's right.
LA is a really big place. There's a lot of places you can go with people any day or night. And I remember the only reason I remember it now is because you reminded me of something I forgot. It was that place on Melrose, remember Figaro's?
Yes, Cafe Figaro.
The Cafe Figaro, and I didn't even I couldn't remember that name. The world was ending, and you just threw it up like no big deal.
That's because I could see you sitting there in the window of it, and I could see the sign.
And I want to tell the audience one more thing before we get into your interesting past regarding your experiences. Not long after the event that I met you at, I already had known Dave for a couple of years, Dave Schrader. My mother unfortunately passed away, and there was something really interesting thing that occurred. She was in a hospice unit at the hospital before she passed, and so I went to see her, and it was hard for me being physically close to her in the bed because she was in pain, and I was feeling her pain, which is one of the problems I have, being a medical intuitive. Anyway, she's barely able to speak, and she asked who, and she's trying to say, who's, and he said, who's Christine? And I went, who? Who's Christine? And I went, Christine who? I've only known one other girl named Christine in my entire life, and that was when I was in high school. Never dated her, just someone she was in. I knew her in grammar school and high school. And mm-hmm. I didn't even know. And I said, Christine, who, to my mother? And she was having very difficult time speaking, labored breathing. Her lungs were filling up with fluid, and she kept saying, Letta, 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 like she was trying to pronounce your last name. And then she gave up. And I thought that was a little odd. And then without telling you, when I spoke to you about 10 days later, you told me that you were trying to send my mother some healing energy because you knew that she was ill. And my mother, of course, didn't know you. Your mother didn't know you at all. She barely knew that I knew you. I don't think she did know that I knew you. So that's really interesting because I've never even dated a girl named Christine, let alone I mean, only knew one as a kid, and that was it. So
of course, you didn't know any Christines. You went to an all-Jewish high school.
Well, no, there was a Christine in there, but I didn't know her. She was like, you know, there were only four people in my school that weren't Jewish, and she was one of them. So that's true. It's when the Jewish holidays came up, the school shut down completely. So Hanukkah, Passover, whatever, they just shut the whole school down. That was a long time ago. That was a long time ago, 44 years ago. But the whole point is, so when you were growing up, you were having psychic experiences. Talk about some of your experiences growing up. I mean, I want the audience to realize that besides being a businesswoman, that you've had acting experience, and you're really, I talked of you before you came on briefly, that you have an extraordinary wit and great sense of humor, which most women who look like you are lacking. So I hope to make sure people realize that. So tell us a little about your background and your experiences.
Well, I grew up with hippie parents, and we had a meditation room in our house. When my sisters and I would argue, we got sent to the meditation room as punishment. But it was just hilarious to us. I grew up mostly, I was born in Los Angeles, and then we moved to Marin County. And my parents always had very strange people over the house, a healer or a guru or you name it. And I would always, I could just read people really well, and things would just come out of my mouth. I would just know things about them, and I didn't know how I was getting that information. But I would shock our guests many times, and this may sound cliche, but it really did start with a Ouija board at about the age of 9.
That well, that's actually
my
not
friend's
cliche.
Dad play with.
It's a good thing you didn't stay with that too long, because that kind of tears people apart if they get too hooked on it. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I didn't. After we brought in, my sisters and I would play with it, and we ended up bringing in a spirit that actually was another child that would be in our room playing with our toys, especially, of course, at nighttime. And I shared a room with my younger sister, who ended up moving in with my mom after that. So it was just me and the little spirit that would come out at night and play with my toys. And she even ripped down my Rick Springfield poster that was tacked on the wall for attacks, and I heard it being torn down. So after that, it was time to get her out. We had somebody come to the house.
How did you react to these experiences growing up? Because not everyone reacts to it well, but you seem that you've incorporated these things pretty well within yourself.
I wasn't scared. I had just an understanding that I just grew up with. I just intuitively knew what it was without knowing. Of course, the older I got, the more I learned about it, and I was very interested and reading all about psychic phenomenon and the other side. And it seemed like every house I've ever lived in, we've had some spirit in there. So when I was, so later on, of course, I kept attracting more and more of that energy around me. And then all the theaters I was in, there's always a ghost in every theater.
Yeah, exactly, because of all the unique individuals that work there, which are usually very strong emotional people, and, that's part of the, I guess, the zeitgeist that goes with it.
I thought it was just because they never give up.
Probably that's
they're still
the
there trying to get that part.
Right. Even when they're gone, they're still performing.
Yes.
Now, I never asked you this. Did you ever have anything to do with a comedy store?
Oh, yes. I know about that, the spirit in the comedy store. I've never had any dealings with that.
Any friends or the people that work there who had any run-ins with it? Or?
Yes, a lot of comedians.
What do you
know?
What did you hear from friends? Or
just they hated being there after it was closed, especially around, I think, the kitchen area. It just a lot of them would just say they got this really strong feeling that they weren't alone when they were alone. And there was a Ghost of the Groundlings theater, too. That's the theater I was mostly involved with. But there is
what type of things are happening there?
Oh, just costumes being moved around and people stealing scripts, or so we thought. just that strong energy. I can almost always walk into a place and I can feel if there's activity around. Without any of the equipment, I just have a sense.
Now, when you grew older, you have these experiences as a child. As you grow older, did the experiences become more frequent or more common, or they just occurred whenever they occurred and that was it?
They just kind of occurred whenever they occurred.
Mm-hmm.
But the psychic, the psychic experiences never stop. I can always tell people stuff about them. Sometimes they call me the useless psychic because it wasn't necessarily information that helped them. I would never be working for a police department trying to find an abductor, because I'd be able to guess the abductor's favorite cereal he ate that morning or a shirt that was hanging in his closet.
Right. But, so it's irrelevant information, the useless psychic.
Yes. I wanted to do a reality show on me. but then it really came out at the Stanley.
Okay, now tell, listen, I'm sure a lot of people, including myself, don't know that much about the Stanley because I've never been in Colorado other than when I was visiting the Air Force Academy decades ago. Tell us a little bit about that environment.
Well, the Stanley Hotel is, as most people know it, as the Shining Hotel, where they think The Shining was filmed. However, it was written. Stephen King wrote the book at the hotel, and a lot of guests died there from tuberculosis. So there are so many spirits around there, and more so. And I've gotten information that it's like a gateway for spirits to come through. And the Native Americans talk about the Shining Mountains that are behind it. It's way up in the hills of Estes Park, Colorado, in a beautiful setting. But they say the Shining Mountains are very haunted and that nobody should be living around there. And if you meet those townspeople, I better watch it, but
right.
You might see why nobody would be living around there.
Now, so you've been there on numerous occasions because you orchestrated events there. You put the events together there, correct?
Yes, I was a sales manager there. So I would mm-hmm. go up there. I'd work from home and drive up there once a week. And in the winter, I would spend the night there, which I hated.
Mm-hmm.
Hated staying there because I knew I wouldn't sleep a wink.
Because of what you knew or what you felt?
Because of what I felt all night long. And I would try to switch rooms many times. I don't want the rooms of the activity as most people want. I was trying to find the ones without it, but they always found me.
No.
So I would get woken up with the sink going on or lights or the TV blasting at 2:00 in the morning.
Mm.
Or something touching my hair would wake me up.
Mm.
I've had doors slammed in my face. Just there's always something happening there.
So it didn't matter what room you were in, it just happened to you there.
Yes. And I was with a coworker walking down the hallway of the second floor, and she absolutely didn't believe in any spirits or ghosts or hauntings. And I said, just hang around me and something will happen to you. And at that moment I said that, something walked right through her and just smacked her in the face. And she was just stunned. Her eyes were just watering. She felt like she just gotten hit.
Mm-hmm.
So from then on, she was definitely a believer.
That turned around pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she really got smacked. It wasn't funny, but it was funny because I couldn't stop laughing.
Did you ever see anything there visually that was extraordinary?
I haven't seen anything at the Stanley, but I have recently at another hotel in Colorado at Clarion Hotel in Greeley. I was working at my desk, and you know, peripherally is when we most see things. There was a man standing next to me with his hand on the desk and gripping the desk really hard. I could see the veins in his knuckles, and I turned, and he didn't have a head. I could see his torso and his neck and no head, which scared me to death.
Did he seem solid, or did he seem translucent or opaque?
It was completely just solid. Mm. It was really scary. I thought someone had just come into my office until I turned. But when I saw that, him without a head, and I later found out the story, I was sure there was something there, and everyone said, no, this hotel isn't haunted. we've never had anything happen. And it turned out there was a man that had tried to commit suicide there a few years back, and the police were called, and he was in his room, and he had a gun, and he pulled the gun on the police officers, and they saved the day by blowing his head off. So now he's really stuck there.
Yeah, literally. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a joke I can make about that, but I won't. I think you know what I would say. Well, okay, since you're a comedian, like it's a pretty intense situation, but I can't see you losing your head over it. It's never a laughing matter when people have to be gunned down by the police. It's very depressing.
I know, and I feel so bad for him. I mean, talk about being stuck in a place.
Yeah, you don't have a lot of control, it seems like, when that occurs.
No, and I've spoken with the dishwasher, because he gets there at 6 in the morning, and he sees him all the time walking around in the kitchen without his head.
Now, I met you end of March of 2009 in Gettysburg at the Eisenhower Conference Center. You know of anything going on around there other than the Gettysburg activity, obviously, you know, the battlefields from Civil Wars. But do you know anything about that location in terms of activity, or did you hear of anything?
So many people had reports of things that happened. I definitely felt it so strongly everywhere on that property, in my room even. There wasn't a place in that hotel really where I didn't feel something. That entire city it feels sad. And
well, I remember they told me that it was, I just checked in. I didn't know much about the environment at all because my work doesn't involve that part of the country. And I remember I was in there, and I woke up the first morning, and my neck hurt because the bed was too hard for me or something. And I went to take a shower, and I pulled the pipe to get the head to bend in. The pipe breaks off, and the wall breaks, and there's water flowing and flooding the bathroom. Okay.
Strike one. The next.
And then I closed the mini fridge, which I put something in that I brought with me, and I closed it a little too hard, and it flew through the wall of the closet behind it. Okay, so then they give me a new room, and I go in the new room, and it was drizzling outside. It was very blustery weather, and I went and touched the lamp because it was dark, and I got a really bad electrostatic shock off the lamp, and I shorted out the electronics in the room. So the plumbers came in to the first room. Why did you break the pipe? I said, do you see me wearing a Superman T-shirt? That's why. Very odd. And they said the older part of the hotel, which is on the other end, I was in the newer part. The older part had problems. But like you just said, Christine, that if you're one of these individuals that's sensitive to these forces, they're attracted to you like a magnet.
Yes. There's nowhere to hide.
And in your taste, they just have good taste. You know, I mean, come on, you know. But it was and then you pulled that little trick on me. Remember when you had the picture taken of you and I together, and you kind of blurred it out because I told you I have a problem being photographed, and then I thought it was real. You said, no, I just did that to make you think something weird had happened.
That's right, because the picture of us came out crystal clear.
Right, exactly. You just did it in the camera, in the computer, to make it look funny to me. Now you've set up these environments for TAPS, right? You've done shows for them as well, like.
I haven't done shows with them. I worked with them at the Stanley.
Okay. Now
they do a lot of events there.
Right. When they've been there and you've been there, has anything? For example, on these particular events, as opposed to the ones you just got through discussing, anything particular occur of note?
When they've
when they
been
were
there?
Present, yeah, when they were doing their thing, you know?
Oh, boy. Well, I took a couple of their crew into the executive offices of the Stanley, which is a place that they hadn't been in before, and they couldn't believe how much activity was in our offices. It's actually like a little house off the side of the property, and they got a lot of lot of activity, a lot of readings with all their equipment. There was a little boy that they found that was actually sitting on my lap, and he knew me. He knew me really well. He was used to me, and he was afraid of everything that was going on. So they made contact with him.
Anything visual incredible. Or just what people felt and what machines record? Anything that was observed visually?
I don't know. I know they've definitely gotten some photographs with a woman, a man. There's been tons of the orb pictures. But yeah, those are so hard to tell if those are real or not, at least for me.
Most of the orbs, I'd say about 99% of the orb pictures that I've seen or run across over the years, since the advent of digital photography, are artifacts. They're apparently, with digital photography and that technology, you get a lot of dust particulates that are totally invisible with conventional photography show up because it's the digital system is far more sensitive to it. And so you can test this. You just create a lot of wind moving around, air moving around, and suddenly you'll see more orbs because there's more dust to reflect light back in that spectrum near the camera. So, you know, those don't impress me. When you get these large things that are somewhat massive, like in the Annity case, and we've seen them in the San Pedro case and other cases where they're the size of a human head or several fists together zipping around the room, and they change direction and fly at you, and they're visible sometimes. That's a whole different story. What's interesting about all this is it seems like, like I said, some people have a predilection for either running into it or it running into them.
I would be an it running into them person.
Right. When you were growing up, did you have more experiences? I think we've got a caller, Christine. Let's see who's calling, okay?
Okay.
We've got a caller. Let's see who's calling. Hello?
Hi.
Yes, who's this?
This is Ashley.
Oh, Ashley, this is Barry Taff. We have Christine Letterman on tonight. As a guest, do you have any questions for Christine or things you want to talk about?
I have a question for both of you. And
okay.
You did ask if this was something you experienced growing up, but I was curious if either of you had childhood experiences that you were aware of.
I think Christine had already discussed that a little bit. Yeah, but
I just didn't know if it was something that, like, you know, an actual experience besides just the Ouija board, but if you could feel spirits when you were growing up, if you're, like, completely aware, or if it was just something more spooky. Because I wonder sometimes if my son is actually, you know, when he has imaginary friends, if he's actually seeing things, if he's feeling a spirit, or if it's really just an imaginary friend.
Does anything else occur besides him claiming to have an imaginary friend present, or that's it?
No, it's more just an imaginary friend, but it's someone that's been around him for years, and that he will say sometimes, you know, he's in the car with us, he's at the house, and then other times I'll ask if the friend is there, and he says no.
So no one's ever seen anything other than your son?
No, just my son. And I didn't know if he was aware of later.
Go ahead, Christine.
Does he see this person? Does he describe him to you?
Yeah, he has described him to me a few times.
Did you have a good feeling about it or a bad feeling?
No, I don't have a bad feeling at all. I was just curious if it's, you know, something that is actually around him. I don't have a bad feeling at all because it's nothing. There's nothing ever, anything bad that's ever said, but it's been something around since literally he started talking.
How old is your son now?
He's 5.
Okay. And are there any other types of paranormal events going on around your son or your family?
I have a family that's been somewhat aware of it. I prefer not to be aware of it because it's just not something that I'm usually interested in. But with my son, you know, I'm forced to be aware of it. So, yeah, there's been things that have happened in my family throughout my life, but, you know, nothing earth-shattering. I don't know if I've ever had my head in the sand about it, but it's just not something that I've, you know, I don't want it attracted to me, but I'm curious to know if he's actually experiencing something.
Do you have any other children, or that's just one son?
Just one.
In your background, your husband's background, any things like this occur?
No, especially not my husband.
Okay. At this point, it's again, if there isn't anything, you know, fantasy companions, it's very common. These what you're describing is very common in children. In fact, if they don't have one, it's uncommon. So this is normal. But if other things occur, start occurring around it.
Yeah, no, that's about it. So I'm glad to hear it's, you know, it's pretty calm.
Yeah.
But there's nothing I felt around it.
Yeah, then I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay,
he's okay. I'm actually, I can see you guys driving in a black SUV, and I have a feeling it's just his spirit guy that he's seeing.
No, we do have a black SUV.
There you go.
I bet it's just a spirit guide, and he's probably more spiritually aware than most children.
Well, he's definitely seems to be more aware of a lot of things.
You know what they say, that, you know, before we learn to stop paying attention, everyone can sense things like this. As we grow older, we're taught, well, these things don't occur, we ignore them. And we shut that aspect of our consciousness down because we're taught it's incorrect.
Well, I'm definitely not doing that. So I try to, whenever he wants to talk about him, I just talk about him like he's part of the family. So I don't want to tell him he's doing anything wrong. But then
no.
I was curious, maybe he is really part of the family.
Yeah, it'll probably, over time, it'll wane. Most of the time it does. I don't know any family who had young children this did not occur in.
Okay, good.
Okay,
well,
I
listen.
I appreciate your call, Ashley, okay?
Thank you. All right, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye, Ashley.
Interesting. I was going to ask you, Christine, the environment the Stanley Hotel is in, do you know anything about what's beneath the ground there, what type of geological substrate, what's under the land, crystalline quartz, volcanic, I mean, I don't know, I never checked it out.
Radon.
A lot of radon?
Yes.
Are you serious?
All over Colorado. I am serious. I don't know exactly about the Stanley. I don't know what kind of minerals.
Yeah, because I know that in where we met each other. Yeah, in Gettysburg, the substrate of the earth, the subsurface, is mostly quartz. And quartz under compression generates power, electromagnetic energy. And it produces all sorts of strange effects. So given what's going on in the battlefields around, you know, in Gettysburg and the horror that transpired there during our Civil War, I'm not for one second surprised these things are happening there. The question is, why is it like someone who I've never been there before, 2009, I went again in 2010, unfortunately you weren't there. And it, whatever happened the first time didn't happen to me. I was expecting it. I brought some little things to play with, you know, to see if I could measure it. And of course, because I brought it, nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
But you have.
That's interesting. I'm going to find out. I'll find out.
Yeah, because the. The one written by Stephen King they didn't shoot at that hotel, but that's what it was based on, right?
Correct. He was, right. Yeah, exactly. He wrote that book.
Right.
It's kind of like the movie. He was the only one up there, and he was writing while the hotel was shut down. And
mm-hmm.
most of the experiences that he wrote about in the movie, he had experienced at the hotel.
How long has the hotel been around, you know?
It was open in the early 1900s, and the date just escaped me. I'm probably totally wrong. Everyone's
well. Has it always been a hotel, or was it something else?
No, it used to. I mean, it was owned by a gentleman named Lord Dunraven, and it was his land. And then Mr. Stanley made it a hotel resort for all the tuberculosis patients.
Mm-hmm. So it was like a hospice unit or a nursing facility initially, or what?
I think it was a hotel.
I mean, but you said tuberculosis. It sounds like people were going
there.
Well,
people with tuberculosis would go up there, yeah, to try to get rid of it, to dry out when they finally realized that they needed the dry weather as opposed to, like, in Louisville, Kentucky, Waverly Hills
right.
Institute, those poor people were dying so fast. It's so damp there.
Mm-hmm.
And
did
they
a lot
had
of
no
people,
idea.
Did a lot of people die at the Stanley, do you know?
Yes.
Okay, you've known me. So probably given it the date of origin, there were probably a lot of people that passed away there.
Oh, yes, and a lot of children did too.
And what's ironic is if that part of the state is full of radon, it seems the most mm-hmm. inhospitable location to have patients dealing with any medical problem.
I know.
Especially
well, they probably, I'm sure they weren't aware of it then. Or it might not
yeah.
have been as bad as it is now with all the, you know, these suburban little towns that are being built and just
mm-hmm.
destroying, ripping up the earth to put these big, huge homes and some Chili's and an Office Mart.
Right. Did the time of year seem to affect what was going on at the Stanley? Was it more intense in the winter, the summer, the spring, the autumn?
I think it was more intense in the winter.
Mm-hmm. When it was cold and snow and
yeah.
all that. Mm-hmm.
It's definitely not damp, though, in Colorado. It's very dry.
But it does snow there, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so
it doesn't rain. It barely rains, but it snows.
It snows, right.
And the Stanley feels more to me, though, like a friendly haunted place. It has a good energy, a happier mm-hmm. energy than somewhere like Waverly Hills in Kentucky. Or I've been all around the countryside of England.
Mm-hmm.
And, boy, went
mm-hmm.
into some very, very little haunted towns.
Of all the ones you've been at, what comes to mind beyond the Stanley? Which ones really, like, you were impressed with the environment or the tales? Or
impressed or scared?
Either or. Flip a coin.
There's a place called the Houghton House, but I guess it would be pronounced Houghton House, in a little town called Amptill, Bedshire. And it was basically a mansion, and what's left of it now is just ruins. In that place, oh my gosh, the second I walked in there, it is just a dark black feeling. I saw actually a lot of black shadows around there.
Mm.
And the gentleman I was with had one of those little boxes, those talking little phonetic boxes.
Frank boxes or ovules?
No, the ovule.
Ovulus?
Yes, hopefully Dave
yeah.
Schrader's not listening. But
well, no, I mean, people that don't understand, these are random event generators that string together words to give them some relevance. But in my opinion, from what I've read and seen, they don't appear to, the only thing that might be functioning would be the psychokinetic manifestation of the person using it. But I've used some of these, and I haven't been impressed with what I've seen or heard. That's just me. But, yeah, the ovulus Frank's box, I've been exposed to a number of these, and none of them impress me as a way to talk to the dead. You just want to talk to the dead, talk to producers that don't pay you. That's to talk to the dead. But I couldn't pass that up. Or talk to an attorney, you know, what the heck, you know, or a politician. Anyway.
Yeah,
so
but you'll still get billed for it, even if they're dead.
Exactly. Even when they're dead, you'll still get a bill every month, get the invoice, correct?
yeah.
So how long ago were you in this place? And this is the United Kingdom, right?
Yes, this is about 3 years ago. I was actually looking for some haunted hotels and areas for Darkness
mm-hmm.
Radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I was up there and with one of Dave Schrader's co-hosts, and he had mm-hmm. the ovulus in that.
Mm-hmm.
We were picking up immediately a man who had fallen, and he'd hurt himself, and he was obviously just stuck, and he kept mentioning that he was hurt, fallen, and he'd fallen off a horse.
Mm.
Later on, when we left and we read about the history of that house, and it somebody did in the 17th century was dragged and hurt from a horse.
Mm.
So we're pretty sure that it was him.
Mm-hmm.
He was like the fourth duke. But
yeah.
it was definitely, it was mm-hmm. not a good feeling. I didn't enjoy it at all. There was just,
mm-hmm.
it just felt very evil there.
Yeah, some places,
sure what's going on.
Yeah, some places don't seem to be upsetting. Other places to be just very uncomfortable for people there. Whatever the presence is, it seems to irritate people. And
yes.
Who knows? I mean, just like in life, there are good people and bad people. I suspect if we survive corporeal death at some point, especially with a violent death, I suspect some of that might not be very pleasant. I want to mention, you know, it's interesting. See, I met Dave Schrader years before I met you, and Dave's actually the one who got me invited to Phenomenology 101 in 2009. If it wasn't for Dave Schrader, my book wouldn't have been published. If it wasn't Dave Schrader, I wouldn't have met you. So I owe Dave Schrader a tremendous debt of gratitude in many respects for helping me. And by the way, you know that you're referenced in my acknowledgments in my book.
I am.
Yeah, remember I said, did you get the book I sent you, the PDF file, the other day?
I haven't opened it yet.
Okay. Well, yeah, you look at the acknowledgments. You'll see your name. It's in there.
Okay. Oh, thank you,
you
Barry.
You inspired me. It's one thing to meet someone that's beautiful, okay? Can't do much about that. You are or you aren't. But it's one thing to be gifted in some respects and to be funny and witty, and that's a rare commodity in any plane, especially dealing with this subject matter.
You know? I didn't hear you have to repeat everything.
Right.
That was easy.
But I mean, you know, how many people into this field who were interested in it have a sense of humor, and it's a wise-ass sense of humor?
Well, so, it's all funny.
You know, the guy who admitted some of the people, I mean, won't go into any names. I have a tremendous respect for Dave. I really like him. We have a lot of interests in common. I don't think he doesn't have the respect for you that I do, because I've seen and heard your abilities at work, and he doesn't. I think he's jealous, to be honest with you, because you're far better. You're better looking than he is, and you're gifted, and he may not be gifted in this way. So we don't agree on that point, but we have a lot of interest in common, and he's been a good friend to me, and I like him. I'm trying to get him on our show here, and he's just so busy, I can barely reach him.
Well, he's doing
maybe
great right now.
Pardon?
He's doing so well right now, and he's got
a
new
show. Yeah, he's got that new
show.
Yeah, man. They asked me to be on it, and it was conflicted with my schedule, so I couldn't do it, so it didn't work out. And it's an interesting show. The best thing on it to me is Dave. There's something to me about Dave. It's very pleasant. There's a very pleasant feeling to him. And he's got a good sense of humor. It's not as quick as yours, but it's good. But he doesn't appreciate you for being here, so I have some respect has to be knocked down there.
He just doesn't know me well. We're on such a business level.
Any other places you've been throughout the world where you ran into things like we're speaking of now?
Oh, let's see. I'll go through my home. Well, I did. We were talking about Waverly Hills, Kentucky earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I went out there to find some hotels again for Dave Schrader. And I got a tour of Waverly Hills, which is unusual to have a tour from the owner, just a one-on-one. But boy, there are these shadow people all over, which are just big black shadows on the wall. Mm-hmm. I first noticed it when we were standing in something called a death tunnel, where they used to pile up the bodies during the winter because it was too far to bring them down the hill, and they also didn't want the other patients to see everybody dying. So we're standing in the death tunnel, and it was a sunny day, and I could see my shadow, my sister's, and the owner, Tina, her shadow, and then I saw two more shadows that were taller than us.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, wait a minute, I kept doing the math, but it was definitely...
Didn't add up.
Yeah, something there. And I've had people that have had to come and work with me to get rid of things that have been in my house and that have attached themselves to me. Because I've had, I guess I'm what they call a hitchhiker, that the spirits see me as a bright light and will hitch themselves onto me.
Or maybe they're just attracted to the way you appear. Literally, it could be that simple. You know, personality and physical appearance. I mean, maybe you eventually may lose your body, but doesn't mean that you don't remember it.
It
you know?
Pays to have a big chest. I even get spirits on me.
Now, I want you several years ago, you were on Leno when they were doing the stuff about... Who did you play in those skits? Talk about that
Paula
for a moment.
Jones.
Yeah, Paula Jones. See, I saw you. Those were hysterical. I just went nuts with that. And I didn't know you at that time. So I remember because I thought, oh, she's really cute. Oh, she's attractive. And it was just hysterical. It was some of the funniest stuff I'd ever seen. So little did I know when I met you that you were a comedian at heart.
Well, you'll have to hear me do stand-up. I do a whole bit on stand-up about paranormal events.
That in itself, you know that be the perfect place to do that would be at the Comedy Store.
I know.
And
yep,
I've been there.
Back to LA.
I've been there way too many times. Between, I don't know what I dislike most, there or the Queen Mary. I've been at those both venues too many times over the years. It's boring already. I knew other people who worked at the Comedy Store. Laurie Jacobson, who wrote the book Hollywood Haunted, worked there. I knew some other met other comedians, and I did have a couple of experiences there over the years on more than one occasion, which were rather striking. But I'm, you know, I'm convinced there are certain people, perhaps like yourself, it may be your personality, it may be the way you're, you know, you have a lot of energy, and that alone could be part of it. It's the way you're wired neurologically speaking. Have you ever been to Rolling Hills Estates in New York, right?
I have, and I've booked Darkness Radio events there, Dave, but I haven't been there myself.
You know anything about that? Because I, again, if these venues are far removed from where I'm at, I don't really pay much heed to what's going on there. Do you know anything about Rolling Hills?
That one was the mental institution.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
What do you know?
It's haunted.
Well, no.
With a bunch of crazies.
Is it Abbott Costello or Dean who's on for?
I don't know much about that place. I'm not a big, I wouldn't consider myself a ghost hunter per se. I know they're there. I don't need to go knocking around trying to find what's out there.
So the reason you started running all over the place doing this, collecting information, was for Dave. About this radio.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, he's a really good speaker. I mean, I've been on his show three or four times, if not more. And I've been on with a lot of different hosts over the years, many of them. And he's one of the most articulate, lucid people I've ever met. He's really quick, and he's sharp, and he's focused, and he knows what he's doing. And it's been a pleasure to know him. It's a lot of shows I've been on since my book came out, and it's like, you know, you can't wait till you get off the phone. All right, enough of this. Like, you know, Dave really draws you into the conversation.
He does. He's a good guy. Yeah. He's really helped me get a lot of business, too, over the years. Referred me to many people.
Right. Now, you've done work outside. So you've done stand-up work, right? Okay.
Yes, I do it now all the time.
Right.
I'm in an improv group.
Okay. And that's in Colorado, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're doing other radio work, like voiceovers?
I do a lot of voiceovers. Commercials. I write commercials and do the voiceovers for, especially for one radio show called Pirate Radio out here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And stand-up. I'm a lot of stand-up.
Mm-hmm. And the last time you performed in Los Angeles was when?
1907.
Well, I knew it was a mistake asking you that. Yeah, you look really good for your age.
Oh, it was back in like 2001, 2002, before I moved here.
Okay. And the question, obviously, which maybe people may be asking, since you work in the industry, in entertainment, why did you move from L.A. to Colorado? Were you willing to share that?
I wanted to become famous, and I know you have to move to a small town for someone to discover you to go back to L.A. So I was ahead of that game. I got really burnt out in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote for DreamWorks for a while, and
mm-hmm.
I just needed a change. And
mm-hmm.
my sister was living here, and he married a native Colorado, and they talked me into moving out here. And
mm-hmm.
I was tired of Beverly Hills, and I just up and moved. I was actually trying to get away from Italian men, and there's almost none out there.
We have another call. Let's see what this person has to say, okay? Hold the line.
Okay.
Here we go. Let's see. Hello?
Hello. How are you doing today?
Yeah. Who's calling?
Yes, this is David.
Yeah, David, yeah. We have Christine Letterman on as my guest and myself.
Hi, David.
Hi, Christine. How are you doing today?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
Great. I have a question for you. I have a 4-year-old little boy, and I haven't had my Nana come into my dreams for a long, long time, and now all of a sudden she keeps appearing, and I just want to know if she's maybe watching over my son.
I'm
your
sure
Nana?
She is.
You mean your grandma?
Yeah, we called her Nana.
Okay.
In Beverly Hills, we call that a nanny.
Right.
But, so she's coming to your dreams a lot lately now?
Yes, you know, ever since I've been doing the fatherly figures for my young son.
Oh, I'm sure she's just letting you know that she's around you and knows your grandson. Were you concerned that she didn't know that you had a son?
Yeah, she died many years before he was born.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, she's just letting you know that she's with you and sees him, knows what's going on.
Oh, that makes me feel wonderful to hear your words say that.
Anything else transpiring around you that would, other than you're having dreams of your grandmother?
Well, she was just one that passed on that, you know, was close to me. And now all of a sudden she's appearing in dreams, you know, many times over and over.
But no other occurrences. No, there's nothing, there's no phenomena occurring in the environment with you or your family.
No visual sightings of her. I haven't seen her.
No, nothing moving around, no machines turning on or off.
No.
Okay.
Nothing. That would really freak me out.
Mm-hmm.
Ask her to show you where the pearls are. There's a strand of pearls that's missing.
Oh, she owned a bead shop. Yes. Maybe something.
She did.
Maybe a strand of her. Yes.
Because sometimes they can tell you things in dreams if you ask them before you go to sleep. Might not be that night. Could be 5 years down the road, but just ask.
Christine, we should
tonight.
Go find the pearls. What's wrong?
You'll
in the
give
wrong
me
business.
Half.
Right. We're in the wrong business here. People come out and ask questions. You give them answers. We go get the information and give them the money.
Exactly.
We're in the wrong
thank
business.
Thank you so much, Christine.
You're welcome,
thank
David.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for the call, okay?
You have a wonderful day. God bless you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
God bless you.
Bye.
God
bless you.
Strange world, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, here you're talking about all these obscure things. I think it's the combination of your humor and your voice. This is, normally, I don't get a lot of callers on the show. I mean, almost nothing. And so far, we've had two, and that's unusual. Most of the time, people just listen. They don't call in. It's you, literally. I'm telling you, they're responding. You have a most extraordinary voice, which is why you've done voiceovers. But the only thing, as I told you when I met you 2.5 years ago, that if I saw you performing stand-up, I'd be so enamored with your look that I wouldn't pay attention to what you were saying, because I'm going, why is she doing comedy? She should be in front
That's
of
awesome.
A you know what I'm saying? It's there is a couple other female comedians over the year you had that were like, oh my God, why are you like, what? Rita Rudner, you're a little more exotic looking than her to me. And when I first saw her, I just like, wow, why is she doing comedy? She should be acting. She's, you know, a very striking appearance. And same thing with you. I go, it doesn't, you know, it's like Lucille Ball. Even when she was younger, she was drop-dead gorgeous. And she became a comedian. You got used to it. And, you know, but even her, she was a strikingly gorgeous lady. But she was good. You know, there are
maybe
good,
I'm just
you know,
a bad
comedian.
Actress.
Yeah, which is why she became a comedian. And it worked. At least she was able to perform her work well, and it served her. You know?
Well, I'm waiting for you to put me on a show, Barry.
Yeah, we were waiting for these things to get off the ground and get your career going back in front of a camera rather than behind it. And
I'll bet you there's a lot of producers listening right now.
Exactly. Well, trust me, if you don't know who she is, look her up online. You'll see her face. You'll see her. This is a really gifted, talented young lady who has a lot to give. And I said, I've known a lot of women who were attractive, and some like her, they were beautiful, but none that had her wise-ass wit and sense of humor, and that's what works. So, you know, it's, you know, and a lot of comedians start out as comedians, and they transition to becoming very, very good actors. I mean, they become really good actors. And I don't think people realize this. You know, I'm sure you, comedy is the hardest thing to deliver if you're acting.
I know.
It's harder than
it's true.
There's nothing harder than comedy. It's just the timing, your body language, everything. And it's just, you're not reading lines. It's just everything. People don't get it at all. So, you know, we'll see. Like I said, there's some possibilities coming forth. And you never know, when my shows get going, since most of them deal with the paranormal, these are scripted shows or movies versus reality type things, you would be natural because you got a look that I think would work. And on top of that, you got a voice that works and you got a good sense of humor. So you just have to know when to roll with the punches and avoid the crazies.
And just remember, Barry, flattery will get you everywhere.
Yeah. That and a dime will get you a cup of coffee in L.A. I can understand. I mean, I've been working in, I haven't been an actor, obviously, or a comedian, but I've worked in none of the business for more. I haven't worked in none of the business for more than 35 years, and it's insane. You're always dependent on other people. You have no control over what you're doing, and it's frustrating that everything you do, you've got to fight and fight and fight, and once in a great while, you're in the right place at the right time. So it's an industry that's run in nepotism.
Yeah.
Totally. It's not what you know, it's who you know. All the jobs I've gotten have been from friends or colleagues. It hasn't been from strangers. Once in a great time, I'm called, and, you know, yeah, I'm being warned the show's about to. Well, listen, we're just about out of time, Christine. You've been a great guest, and you're the only one that's generated two calls, literally, since the beginning of the year. So I want to thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much, Barry. Thank you for having me on. I had a great time.
Sharing your insight, your personality, your wit, and your beauty, and we'll have you on again once it's available. As we're open
to that. I
love that. Okay?
Okay, Barry. Have a beautiful night.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
LP Web Design. 100% custom websites, entry pages, Twitter backgrounds, banners, and more. For more information, please visit liveparanormal.com, the official web designer of the stars.